Support for this podcast and the following messages comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, proud to support the many Texas businesses who make safety their number one priority in the workplace. More information about safety-focused workers' comp available at WorkSafeTexas.com.
This is Election Central with Rita Cosby on 77 WABC. It's the weekly show that gets behind the curtain on the local and national political conversations. Here's Rita Cosby on 77 WABC and WABCRadio.com.
Welcome to Election Central with Rita Cosby. We have a fantastic program for you today. We begin with my exclusive interview with Hillary Clinton. Her new memoir is called What Happened, and it is getting a lot of buzz. And joining me now is the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Secretary Clinton, great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Rita. It's great to talk with you today.
It certainly is. And boy, I can't think of a more powerful time to do this interview with you, especially given the developments in just the last few days. You talk a lot in your book about women empowerment. What is your reaction to so many of the allegations against Alabama GOP Senate nominee Roy Moore?
You know, Rita, there were a lot of reasons to be worried about him, and the people of Alabama now have more reasons to be concerned, because clearly his whole past is now revealed, not only with respect to these latest charges, but, you know, some of the ideas that he's promoted, some of his behaviors while sitting on the bench. You know, clearly he doesn't appear to be someone who will bring respect and honor to the state of Alabama. So I hope that the voters of Alabama know they've got a very strong man of integrity and proven experience to vote for instead, and that they will take that opportunity. Because what I'm worried most about right now, Rita, is that our politics is broken, and we are unfortunately seeing that firsthand on Capitol Hill with this terrible tax bill that they are trying to push through that will hurt the majority of Americans and benefit the tiniest percentage of really wealthy people. So, you know, folks in Alabama need somebody who will stand up for them, and I hope that's how they vote when they can.
And I definitely want to ask you about the tax bill in a moment. Do you think, given the fact that it's now nine women who've made various allegations against Roy Moore, should he drop out of the race?
Well, I'm going to leave that to the Republican Party because they're the ones that have to deal with this. And, you know, look, we have a man who's accused of sexual assault sitting in the Oval Office, don't we? And the very credible accusations against him have not been taken seriously. So I think that the Republicans have a big problem that they're going to have to address, and it's not just confined to what's happening in Alabama.
Let me ask you about the situation as you talk about with Roy Moore, because you just said that, you know, you have a sexual assaulter in the White House. How could you say that about President Trump?
Well, based on the very credible statements that have come forward from, I think, now a dozen women, and really based on his own words, you know, the Hollywood Access tape was not made up. He was describing sexual assault, and it was shocking, yet people seem to think he, you know, didn't have to be held accountable for it. And now we're, you know, seeing other accusations against other people, but that doesn't mean that what we learned in the campaign and what we can see in terms of the people, the women who are still speaking out about their experiences with him should be overlooked or forgotten.
Now, you talk about women and that they should be believed. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, your longtime friend and political ally, said in an interview this week that your husband should have resigned after his affair with Monica Lewinsky. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what she was trying to say. There has been some confusion about it. But look, this was a painful time, not only in our marriage, but in our country, as I've written about. But it was investigated fully. It was addressed at the time. He was held accountable. That is very different than what people seem to be remembering from that period, because you can go back and look at the history. But right now, this is not a distraction we should fall for. The Republicans are led by a man who admitted to sexually assaulting women. He bragged about it, and if we're going to encourage women to have the courage to be heard, we can't excuse the president from this debate. And look, the right and the Republican Party needs to answer for their own acts and tell America that what Roy Moore and the president did will not be tolerated.
But how is that different than the allegations against your husband? Because do you concede that your husband might not have lasted in office if that happened today?
Well, I don't know that we can rewrite and revise history, but look, if you know, the Justice Department wants to assign a special counsel to investigate President Trump, that's the parallel. If they want to spend $70 million investigating every allegation that anyone might make against him, that would be in line with what happened in the 90s. So if we want to hold people accountable, that happened in the 90s. And I think that that's the parallel. If people want to look back in history and say what was done then should be done now, then they should go forward and do that.
But shouldn't they then also look at allegations against your husband and others? Because some feel that it's a double standard.
I don't think so, Rita. I mean, everything was investigated. Everything was investigated. And I think that's the big difference. So when somebody else is investigated to the tune of $70 million and a special prosecutor who wants to prosecute and a partisan Republican Party that wants to impeach, that's the parallel. And the people of the United States rejected it. The Senate rejected it. But he was held accountable and he paid a price for it, as was appropriate.
Do you regret, though, not maybe, you know, saying something, you know, I guess, supportive of the women? Because you've always said that women should be believed. And yet George Stephanopoulos and others have said that you, you know, were part of sort of the attacking the victims, the people who are making allegations against your husband. Do you regret that?
Look, I think every situation has to be judged on its own merits. And there were allegations that were disproved. There were allegations that were absolutely contradicted under sworn testimony. So, of course, you should give you know, people who make such allegations the benefit of the doubt. That's what our system does. But then you have to investigate them, and that fully happened in the late 90s. And what we've got here is something very different. You know, there's been no commitment to investigate the more than a dozen women who have made charges against President Trump, and there's been no effort to really go into and understand what he was talking about in his Hollywood Access tape. So I just they are not parallel, and I think it's unfortunate that people are either misremembering or misinterpreting history, because the country remembers it. The country went through it, and it was a painful period. The Republicans spent tens of millions of dollars looking at every part of our lives, and we all know what they found. And that was, you know, based on those allegations that were provable and the many that were not. And this is a distraction that we shouldn't fall for. Because if you're going to hold people to the same standard, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of parallels that are not being followed in recent times.
And Secretary Clinton, what would you say, though, specifically to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand? Because, you know, she's a longtime ally, friend, and also even took your Senate seat.
Well, she has been a friend. And Bill and I have supported her over the years. We both have campaigned for her and raised money for her. And obviously, I think the history of the 90s reaches different conclusions. That's what impeachment and a trial is meant to determine what should happen, and it did determine that. And I think we ought to now look at what's happening today and learn from history where we can. And if we're going to be serious about holding people accountable, have a process to do that.
Are you surprised, though, that she has made these comments?
Oh, I, you know, as I said, I don't exactly know what she was trying to say, because her whole comment was somewhat contradictory, but I'll let her speak for herself.
Aren't you disappointed because even your former aide came out and blasted her and basically said she's a hypocrite because she was, you know, received endorsements from you and support from you?
Oh, I'm not gonna comment on that. I think, you know, she has to speak for herself.
Let me ask you about Al Franken, because as you talked about with Roy Moore, of course, some pretty serious allegations, Secretary Clinton, have come out about Al Franken, allegations of sexual harassment and also sexual assault. Should he resign because he is a sitting senator?
Look, Al Franken, you know, is a friend of mine, and I deeply regret what he did. There's no excuse for his behavior, none at all. But he's called for an investigation. He's apologized to the woman involved. Apparently, she's accepted the apology. So I think we've got to, you know, recognize that he agreed to an ethics investigation. It will go to the ethics committee. It will investigate whatever the situation was, and they'll decide about what, if any, action should be taken based on that behavior. And I think that's the appropriate process because, you know, I think that something like that coming into the public arena and Al's very quick acceptance of responsibility and apology and his willingness to be investigated and to take the consequences is the kind of accountability I'm talking about. I don't hear that from Roy Moore or Donald Trump, do you?
Do you agree that there should be zero tolerance for sexual harassment and sexual assault?
Absolutely. No, you know, women have to be protected. They have to be able to work comfortably in any work setting, any kind of social setting. And, of course, there should be not only no tolerance, there should be an absolute understanding that there will be accountability. And again, when credible allegations come forward, look at the contrast between Al Franken accepting responsibility, apologizing, and Roy Moore and Donald Trump, who have done neither.
Well, of course, President Trump has said it was locker room talk. And Al Franken is a sitting senator. And there's that picture, too, of him, which appears looks like that he is groping the radio host Leanne Tweeden.
Well, I don't see it the way you just described it, Rita. I think when someone admits to sexual assault and more than a dozen women come forward with very specific allegations, that's not locker room talk. And that certainly is more than what we know so far about Al Franken. So, look, there's a double standard. I get it. The Republicans deny, and divert, and they get away with it because the press is more concerned about somebody who accepted responsibility than people who will refuse to accept responsibility and instead attacked the women who have made the allegations against them. And that has to stop. There should be no double standard. If you're going to hold somebody accountable, hold them accountable and without regard to their partisan affiliation.
And everyone, stay with us. More from my exclusive interview with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton right after the break.
This is what live, local, on it means. Politics and much more. Election Central. Rita Cosby, 77 WABC.
And welcome back to Election Central with Rita Cosby. Here is more of my exclusive interview with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, whose new book is called What Happened. Let me ask you, if I could, about the uranium one, because I know you've been asked some general questions, but I just have two or three specific ones, Secretary Clinton. One is the former head of the Kazakh Atomic Energy Agency. He said that you, as senator, canceled meetings with Kazakh officials and would not meet with them until uranium assets were transferred to Frank Giustra. He's the Canadian businessman. And then 2 months after those assets were transferred, the businessman donated $30 million to the Clinton Foundation. What do you say to people who say that that just seems unseemly?
I don't know what he's talking about, so I can't respond to it. You know, let's talk about Uranium One and all of the wild accusations. Let's remember that it started out as a Steve Bannon Breitbart project that was designed to hurl false allegations against me. It got into the mainstream press because the New York Times made a deal with Breitbart And that doesn't get enough attention. The Times, really got in bed with Breitbart and the far right, and they should hold themselves accountable for getting the story so wrong. Just a few days ago, one of the commentators on Fox News called the accusations inaccurate, did a very compelling takedown of the story based on the facts. Trey Gowdy, congressman from South Carolina, no friend of mine, and no stranger to wasting taxpayer dollars on politically motivated investigations, said that a special counsel was not warranted. So what we have here is exactly what it looks like. It's a political stunt by the Trump administration and its allies to distract from the very serious information coming out about the Trump campaign's connections with Russia. They don't want the press and the public paying attention to what we're learning about their involvement with Russia. And I wrote about this in the book. I have a whole chapter on Russia. And if any of your listeners are still scratching their heads, I hope they'll read it because, you know, when I started out talking about the connections with Russia, a lot of people, you know, really just dismissed them. They couldn't believe it. And I understand why. It was pretty outlandish to think that a political candidate and his campaign would be conspiring with a foreign adversary to win an election.
But, was there anything, Secretary Clinton, to this allegation specifically? Was there anything to, can you understand why people?
Rita, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard that. I don't know anything about that. And it's part of the whole Uranium One confusion. And so, no, I don't know anything about it. I do know that this whole thing has been investigated repeatedly and it's been debunked repeatedly.
Can I ask you just on the surface, because one of the things that people point to is that in the Uranium One story, it troubles them that the Clinton Foundation failed to disclose it was about over $2 million in donations from the chairman of Uranium One as the deal was being reviewed, considered. Do you agree that that just looks bad?
Rita, that's not true. The gentleman in question had sold his interest in Uranium One some years before. It's just not true, Rita. Now, I know that, you know, the right does a great job of throwing up these crazy allegations, but just look at the facts. Go back and look at Shepard Smith's takedown. None of this is true. Now, that doesn't mean they won't investigate it because they're trying to divert attention from their connections with Russia. But I can assure you it's been investigated. It's been looked at by the press, by experts. Everybody has come to the same conclusion. There is no factual basis. I had nothing to do with the decision. Now, that is a fact. I had nothing to do with it. It was delegated to somebody else in the State Department, and nine people had to agree, and they all agreed from all the different agencies in our government. And then two Republican governors had to agree, you know, John Huntsman in Utah and Rick Perry in Texas. This is just a smokescreen. So, you know, there's no facts to it, but, you know, I can't stop, the Justice Department and the White House from trying to throw sand in the eyes of people.
Let me ask you, Secretary Clinton, I know you've said a number of harsh things about President Trump. Is there anything you admire that you think he's done well as president?
No. The answer is absolutely no, Rita. And I don't say that with any joy. I respect the office. I think he has disgraced the office. I think he has behaved in a way that is not in keeping with our Constitution. He has failed to enforce laws like sanctions on Russia that the Congress overwhelmingly passed. He has used the office to enrich himself and his family and his business. I am deeply, deeply disappointed. I didn't think he'd be a good president, but I didn't think he'd be as bad as he's turned out to be.
And very quickly, how important, you brought up tax reform at the beginning, how important do you think that is to his presidency?
Well, it's important to the Republican donors, all the billionaires who support him. So it's a tax plan designed to help billionaires. And it's regrettable that it passed in the House, but I will predict to you that a number of Republican members of Congress who voted for it will lose their seats in 2018 because what they did was to vote against their constituents, to vote to cut Medicare, to vote to cut Medicaid, to vote to cut Social Security disability insurance, and to, you know, in other ways, hurt people that they represent. And the Senate Republican plan has gone from bad to worse. It will implement throwback economic policies that will cut taxes for corporations and the rich while increasing them for most Americans. How do you do that? I mean, the Republicans will tell you that giving corporations a tax break creates economic growth. That's their argument. But that is not true. It hasn't been true in the past. My husband raised taxes, and we had the longest peacetime expansion in American history. But what the Republicans will do with their tax plan is dramatically increase federal deficits. And really, one of the bait and switch parts of this whole thing is they're giving permanent tax cuts to corporations by giving some tax cuts to the middle class, which means that people making under $75,000 a year, which is the vast majority of Americans, will actually see their taxes increase. And then to add insult to injury, the Senate Republicans would take health care coverage away from 13 million people to pay for these permanent corporate tax cuts that flow overwhelmingly to the wealthy. And, you know, there's even talk of cutting Medicaid next year to pay for tax cuts, something that Trump said in his campaign he would never do. He would never cut Medicare. He would never cut Medicaid. Well, you know, that's on the table right now. So this is bad policy that is downright cruel to working Americans. And I encourage people to call their senators, tell them you oppose this bill. You know, citizen activism worked in stopping repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. And I think it can work here if people get really passionate about it.
What is ahead for you? There are some reports you may be at Columbia University as a professorship.
You know, Rita, I haven't made any commitments yet. I want to finish my book tour. We're talking from Austin, Texas, where I am going to be doing a book signing. But I am most committed to helping new young organizations through my new group called Onward Together get the support they need to help win elections like they did in Virginia last week. And I'm going to do everything I can to support Democrats and causes that I believe in, because I think the future of the country is at stake. And I'm going to be active in the debate going forward about, you know, how we're going to get back on track and not to, you know, have these terrible laws passed and give up on our economic and strategic and moral leadership in the world. So I write about a lot of this in my book, What Happened. I hope your listeners will find it of interest, because I think everybody has a stake in it, regardless of your partisan political ideology. You know, we can't let our country get undermined, and we can't give up on our most important values like our democracy and the rule of law.
Secretary Clinton, thank you so much for being here. Again, the book is called What Happened.
Thanks, Rita. Good to talk to you.
And you can get Secretary Clinton's book online and at bookstores and get more details about her acclaimed memoir, What Happened, and her tour schedule at HillaryClinton.com. She continues to do many big and interesting events across the country and certainly has had a fascinating life. And everyone, when we come back, we will switch gears and talk about a powerful new environmental documentary with actor Jason Priestley. Stay with us.
Rita Cosby and Election Central, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And welcome back to Election Central with Rita Cosby. Well, later today, there will be screenings worldwide of a very powerful environmental documentary. It is called River Blue, and it is narrated by Jason Priestley, the very talented actor. Many of us know him from Beverly Hills 90210 and so many other great shows. And the film is basically a rallying cry for top fashion brands. And to explain all about it is the actor Jason Priestley. Jason, great to have you here on the show.
Thank you, Rita. Nice to be here.
Tell me, how did you get involved in this? Because this is, I've been looking a lot about this. It's very revealing and very eye-opening, this documentary.
It is incredibly eye-opening. I got involved with the film. Roger Williams, who produced and directed the film, is an old friend of mine from Vancouver. We've done a lot of work together in the past. He sent me a cut of the film, and he was looking for someone to narrate the film for him. And when I saw the film myself, and I was shocked by what I saw. I've always been a big advocate for clean water and especially clean inland waterways. So I I've, you know, done a lot of conservation work in those areas myself. But to understand the true scope of what is happening in these third world countries and what the fashion industry is getting away with in these third world countries, it's shocking. And the way that this film shines a light on the egregious offenses that are occurring, it was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up.
Yeah, it's amazing, too. And everybody, we are talking to the actor Jason Priestley, who narrates a very powerful documentary. Again, screenings really worldwide, including in New York today. A preview to the digital release, which is going to be later this month and also in early December. The documentary is called River Blue. And Jason, it's amazing to see, and I didn't know this, that after oil production, fashion is the world's largest source of environmental pollution, especially in rivers. That's staggering.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, denim has been the fashion industry's dirty little secret for a very long time. You know, to make denim is a 7-step process that requires a lot of dyes and a lot of very toxic dyes. Also, leather tanneries and the amount of dyes and caustic materials that are required to make leather and make especially colored leather. You know, these things are incredibly toxic processes that when they happen in third world countries where there are no environmental agencies like the EPA to oversee them, you know, all of those, all of the effluents from those processes can just run unchecked into the groundwater and into the rivers of those, and eventually into the sea. That's what's causing a lot of the catastrophic problems that we see. Not only in the rivers in these third world countries, but in the collapse of the fisheries of these countries as well. You know, so many of these systemic problems are, you know, they all build upon each other. The problem with the fact that there's no more salmon is because there are no more herring, and the reason there's no more herring is because there are no more there's no more plankton, and the reason there's no more plankton is because they've dredged all the coral reefs too much, and the coral reefs can't produce any more plankton. So the smallest problem becomes magnified as it goes further up the food chain, and as these the fashion houses that have their plants way up river. As all the pollutants get deposited upriver and make their way downriver and eventually into the sea, then they start to not only do they kill the river on the way down the river, then they start to kill the sea at the mouth of the river, and then that starts to cause the collapse of the fishery at the mouth of the river, and it starts to kill not only the fishery, but it starts to kill the society that's built around the mouth of that river and around the harbor. And, you know, it's a real tragedy for humanity is really what it is.
And also actor Jason Priestley, who is talking with us now about a very powerful new documentary. It's called River Blue. It's an environmental documentary and very eye-opening. The other thing, too, is drinking water. It's something that we should all be concerned about, right?
Yeah, 100%. The access to clean, safe drinking water is one of the big problems that we have currently on the planet. Not having access to clean drinking water is the number one killer of small children. It is the number one reason for children and for adults to miss days of education, to miss days of work. It is the single biggest problem I think that we have on this planet right now that nobody seems to want to talk about. Because us who live here in the first world, to us, access to clean drinking water is simple. We go to the tap, we turn it on, we have clean, safe drinking water. But in third world countries, which make up the greater part of our planet, the greater part of the population of our planet, live in third world countries, and they don't have access to clean, safe drinking water. And I believe that access to clean, safe drinking water is an inalienable right that all humans should have. And unfortunately, there was a huge percentage of the population on this planet that do not have access to clean, safe drinking water.
I know one of the things also, Jason, that at the end of the day, this documentary also sort of inspires people, too, that there's a message that you want the audience to take away in terms of action.
Absolutely. This documentary isn't all doom and gloom, and it isn't all about, oh my God, we're killing the planet and we're all going to die. We lay out, here's a lot of bad things that are happening, but then we also show that there is a whole sector of the fashion industry that recognize that there is a problem in the fashion industry, and that are trying to do things differently, and that are doing things differently very successfully. And so we try in the documentary to be very positive and very forward thinking and very forward looking, which I think there is a certain segment of the fashion industry that is starting to look that way as well, because I think that that as a society and as a race, I think that we all have to start looking that way as well. And I think that there is a certain very large segment of our nation that is looking that way. And I think we're all very lucky that we are all here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the documentary, again, screened all over the world today. Again, digital release coming at the end of November and beginning of December. To get details, you can go to riverbluethemovie.eco. Again, riverbluethemovie.eco. And Jason Priestley, thank you very much. Great to have you here on this very important and interesting topic.
Rita, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And everyone, stay with us when we come back on Election Central with Rita Cosby. Our salute to our heroes segment with author and journalist Sebastian Younger.
Now on Election Central with Rita Cosby, this week's salute to our heroes.
Now to our salute to our heroes segment, where we honor the military, their families, and also share stories of courage and stories about war. Our guest today is famed journalist Sebastian Younger. He is well known for his best-selling book, The Perfect Storm, and also his Academy Award-nominated documentary, Restrepo, which chronicled the war in Afghanistan. It was so powerful. And now he has a new feature documentary. It is called Hell on Earth, The Fall of Syria and the Rise of ISIS. It premieres Sunday, June 11th at 9 o'clock Eastern Time on National Geographic Channel. And it offers a rarely seen look inside the civil war, basically covering all the various angles. And there are many of them. And joining us now is great journalist Sebastian Younger. Sebastian, great to have you here again.
Thank you, Rita. It's nice to be talking to you.
What did you learn? You've been out there on the front lines with the troops for so many years. What did you learn from getting this look inside Syria and really from so many angles, talking to the families, to the militias? What was the most surprising thing to you?
Well, this was a very different kind of war than the one I covered in Afghanistan with the troops, because obviously it's a civil war and Americans are barely involved in it. We tried to get cameras to factions on all sides. Syria is way too dangerous to shoot in for us. But we got cameras to Syrians, Kurdish militias, the FSA, the Free Syrian Army. We even tried to get a cameraman with ISIS. And ultimately that failed, but we did get a lot of other material from ISIS. So we really tried to show the mechanics of a civil war sort of from the inside out. And what did I learn? The longer a country sort of simmers in chaos, the more radicalized people can become. It's one of the reasons to try to stop these things early on. It's for the better of the world. And, you know, also, obviously, that very, very good, decent people will take up arms and fight their government if their government is killing them. And that's on, unfortunately, on sort of full display in the conflict in Syria.
Yeah, it certainly is. I have a lot of questions for you. First of all, how do you get a cameraman to follow ISIS? How close did you come to getting that?
Well, we were getting people who live in those areas. And so we got someone who was... Syrian, and it just got tricky. We didn't quite manage to do it, but we got close. But we had other people who were Syrians who were living under civilians who were living under ISIS. We follow one family, a wonderful family, two brothers and their children and wives, living under ISIS, and we got a camera to them, and they self-documented. They shot their lives, their daily lives under ISIS. They shot their conversation about trying to escape. They shot their escape hidden in the back of a truck, through an ISIS checkpoint into Turkey, across the border into Turkey, and then onto a Zodiac trying to get to Greece. They shot all of this themselves, and that's the through line in the movie. It's extremely powerful material.
That is just extraordinary. What was it like for them living under ISIS?
Well, you know, these people are Muslim, of course. They're Syrian. They're good people. And they look at the sort of radicalism and the extremism of ISIS. I mean, ISIS, you know, they were torturing and executing people in public squares for incredibly minor offenses like smoking and things like that. And, you know, their opinion was that the ISIS has nothing to do with Islam. You don't cut off people's heads because you disagree with them, as one of them said. They were really absolutely disgusted by ISIS and completely rejected them as a religious voice. And they ultimately left because life was hell under ISIS.
It's amazing that they were able to escape, too. How difficult was it for them to escape ISIS?
They hired a smuggler, and he sort of knew what to do. And it cost them thousands of dollars, but they got out. But it's hair-raising footage. I mean, it's, you know, they sedated the children so they wouldn't cry. They were sort of under a tarpaulin in the back of a truck. They sedated the children so the children wouldn't cry. I mean, it was terrifying.
Really terrifying. Just
they
to
all,
see.
They all would have been shot if they'd been discovered. They would have been lined up and shot.
No question. And it just shows the incredible heroism, I think, of the people dealing with this and the effect. I think what your documentaries always do so well is you put a human face on it. And as you talk about covering this family sort of from beginning to end, what do you hope to accomplish by this documentary?
Well, first of all, I want people to understand that when civil wars sort of gain momentum, I mean, in this case, the civilian population was first asking and then demanding very reasonable democratic reforms from the regime that they lived under. And those demands, those protests were met with machine gun fire in the streets. And eventually it became a civil war. And I just wanted to show, first of all, that civil wars can happen, often involve very, very good, decent people who are asking for completely reasonable things. And when that is met with violence, it will descend into a civil war. There's a temptation in this country to think, oh, there's a civil war. Those people are crazy. Let them kill each other. Those people are exactly like me and you, and they're asking for things that you and I, frankly, take for granted in our country. And so I wanted to explain that. I mean, I also wanted to sort of show how when we leave countries in chaos for years and decades, Somalia, Afghanistan, those kinds of countries, that eventually radicalism will rise up out of that situation. It's extremely dangerous, and it's very tempting in America to be sort of isolationist and say, let them kill each other. It's not our problem. It's their problem. Maybe it is their problem, but their problem will reach out and touch us and hurt us eventually, as it did on 9/11. So I sort of wanted to explain the sort of mechanics of that.
Well, and Sebastian Younger, as many people believe, too, it was sort of that power vacuum where people were saying, look, we should bring in troops. We should do other things to maintain order. Is there a message that they have now for America? What are they saying to you, or what were they saying to your team?
Well, mostly the Free Syrian Army, which are certainly they started out as completely, utterly reasonable, decent people who, as I said, wanted things that everyone should want, which is freedom and human dignity. they just wanted weapons. I mean, they just wanted the arms embargo lifted so that they so that Western powers could arm them so that they could fight Assad. Eventually, so they but they never were they really never were armed, and so the civil war sort of wallowed along, and a lot of people died. Now 400,000 people have been killed, mostly civilians, mostly by the Assad regime, by the way. And then eventually ISIS sort of rose up, and that they are so terrifying and so radical and so nihilistic that now when you talk about arming rebel factions in Syria, you have to seriously wonder if those weapons might wind up in the hands of ISIS, which is a problem. So the longer these things go on, the harder they are to solve. Right now, I don't know what the solution is. I mean, some things don't really have a solution, and this might be one of them.
Yeah, that was my next question to you, is what's next? Because it is so, you know, as you point out, those numbers are staggering. 400,000 killed, Sebastian, and just you've seen, you know, those experiences firsthand that they're going through over there. And now refugees all over the world, too. What do you think we can do next? What's your sense of it?
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. Like, in this, the equivalent in this country would be 7 or 8 million people killed. That would be the, you know, the proportionally what it would be in this country. And half of Syrians have been displaced from their homes. So try picturing that in this country. It's unthinkable. And that's what they're going through. And most of those people are really decent, peace-loving people. And so, I, you know, I think ultimately ISIS is going to be defeated on the battlefield. I think they're eventually going to lose Raqqa and Mosul. I think Syria eventually will have a de facto partition. But, these countries that have been shattered by civil war, we do have to help them in some way, like because otherwise there's the real risk of radicalism and groups like al-Qaeda and ISIS sort of taking root like a kind of cancer in the chaos, and that not only is it terrible for the people who live there, but you know can be extremely dangerous to the rest of the world.
Absolutely, very powerful message. Again, the documentary, it's called Hell on Earth. It's the Fall of Syria, the Rise of ISIS. It premieres Sunday, June 11th, 9 o'clock Eastern Time on National Geographic Channel. And it's going to be played in, I saw it, 171 countries and 45 languages. And it certainly sounds like a very important film. Sebastian, great to have you here. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Rita. It was a pleasure talking to you.
This is New York firefighter Raphael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Every day, a part of every sub you buy at Firehouse Subs helps provide life-saving equipment for first responders. And now, for a limited time, they're introducing the Daily Sub Special. Every day, get a medium sub of the day for just $5.55. They kick it off with Meatball Monday and finish it off with Italian Sunday, with something delicious every day in between for just $5.55. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Tap the banner now to learn more.